Okay. I'd like to call the Wednesday, February 5th, 2025 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District to order. May you all please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we go any further, I want to welcome Cassie. It's our new Grover Beach representative.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Who's our clerk? Are you the clerk tonight?
So, good evening. Yes, Ms. Simpson had a personal matter that didn't allow her to attend tonight, so I will be attempting to do both the clerk and district administrator roles, which I've done a handful of times, and I'm not as good as Amy, but we'll get through it. Thanks.
We'll make it. Okay. And agenda review, is there anything anyone wants to change or move on the agenda? Okay. So can I get a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second? I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we approve the agenda. All right, that'll bring us to public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing none, then we will move on to our consent agenda. That is the approval of the warrants, the meeting minutes of December 4th, 2024, and the approval to purchase and replace 3 new chemical tanks. Is there any discussion on?
Just quickly, Jeremy. Yes.
Mr. Gent, just because we have a whole bunch of new people here that haven't been here in a bit, and we have an actual, like, more than routine item on the consent agenda. Maybe you could just briefly talk about the 3 new tanks.
Yeah, I'll actually ask Chief Plant Operator Michael Jones to cover that item. So if you want to talk about the chemical tank replacement that is budgeted and that we're working on. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah. So just part of our CIP, we've had our chemical tanks on site. These are our main chemical tanks on site. We've had them on site for, I want to say, probably 12 to 15 years. We've actually pushed that, replacing them back because of the redundancy project, but now we're choosing to move forward. We reached out to 2 vendors to get competitive proposals, and we're just requesting the board's approval to proceed with replacing the tanks as scheduled.
And that was budgeted and ready to go?
Yeah, yes, it's budgeted and ready to go.
Perfect. Thank you so much. No more
Great.
Questions.
All righty. Everyone, is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Yeah, do you have any questions? Okay, so we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a roll call, please.
Chair Linda Austin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Karen Ray Russom?
Yes.
And Director Cassie D?
Yes.
Okay. Motion, yeah.
Okay, thanks. That brings us to item 6, which is our action items. So the first item is the announcement of the rotation of the chair and vice chair for the 2025 calendar year. So that we rotate. Can you, Jeremy? I guess I didn't print that little chart.
Yeah, it might be, and it's kind of a short section there, Linda, that's hidden. But I can go ahead and take it. So it's recommended that the board consider, confirm, and announce the rotation of chair and vice chair for the 2025 calendar year in accordance with district bylaws. Per district bylaws, election of the chair and vice chair is established as an annual rotation. Bylaws state that the chair and the vice chair of the board shall be elected annually at the first meeting in January of each calendar year or at the next regular or special meeting if directors have not been timely designated by their respective agencies. That's why we're doing it here in February. The election of chair shall be made in accordance with the following rotation. And it goes from Oceano to Grover, then to Rio Grande, and that repeats. So this evening, the chair personship will rotate from Oceano to Grover Beach, from Linda Austin to Cassie D. And then the election of the vice chair shall be the person elected to serve as the chair the preceding year. So we this district does it a little bit reverse, where you actually move down from chair to vice chair, and the rotation is backwards from what I'm commonly used to. But so this evening, following approval of this item, we will switch chairs, and Director D will become Chairperson D.
Who's vice chair? Then me.
And then Director Austin will become vice chair. Yeah.
You'll be director. Okay. So anybody have any comments? Anything? Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none. Okay. Well.
All right, Mr. Chair, I will.
Do we vote on this?
Do we need to vote?
Do we need
Wendy,
to vote?
Do we need to vote on that? Or it just happens?
We just move.
Yeah, I think we just move.
I'm just waiting for Wendy.
Yeah, we just. Right. Okay.
Yes, sorry.
Oh, yes. There you go.
All right.
All righty. Now that I am situated, thank you so much, and I'm excited to take on this role and be a part of this board. So we'll just move right along into the next action item, which is 6B, the redundancy project update.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. So this evening, we're delivering another quarterly progress report for the district's redundancy project, and with us this evening is Ms. Eileen Shields with MKN and Associates, who's been on the project since we began construction and as working as an extension of staff and as a project engineer. So Ms. Shields, I'll turn it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gent. Can you all hear me okay?
I think it's on.
No.
I actually think
How's
it might
this?
Be over...
Is this working?
You might have to use legal counsel's microphone,
okay,
if that's possible.
I'm not sure where the... I don't see an on button. There we go. Let's try that.
It works.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, it's on now. Excuse me. So sorry.
Is this on? No?
Well, we can hear you.
I think it's from that one. Oh, there we go. Okay, it's on. Yeah.
All right. I need to get loud. Okay. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Eileen Shields. I'm a principal engineer with MKN and Associates, and have been serving, as Mr. Gent indicated, as an extension of staff for this project, serving as project manager. The district's been working to develop the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project for quite some time. The project, as you know, is intended to allow the district to take major process units offline for maintenance or repairs without risking violations. And the project largely consists of the addition of two activated sludge aeration basins and a secondary clarifier, along with supporting equipment and processes. And then there's also a component that provides some additional flood proofing to the wastewater treatment plant's critical systems. A notice to proceed was issued to Phelan's Construction in January of 2021, and the project was originally expected to be completed in the summer of 2023. The schedule was first impacted by delays in receipt of critical equipment, and then in July of 2023, damage to the secondary clarifier floor slab was discovered. Through a lot of investigation and coordination and review, the project team determined that the primary contributor to the structural failures was the design and design errors or incorrect assumptions. Kennedy Jenks, the design engineer, developed a design for rehabilitation of the secondary clarifier. The district's team did have a peer review on that rehabilitation. And the project team has been working since March of 2024 to do that rehabilitation work. It started with demolition, consisted of some micro piles for structural support of the clarifier and a new thicker floor slab. So that work is now nearing completion. And we're hoping to get it up and running within a matter of weeks. At the June 5th, 2024 meeting, the board approved a resolution increasing the budget for the project. This was important to allow the SC2 rehabilitation work to continue and for the project to keep moving forward to get it online and operating. These costs are being tracked separately. We've been very careful in reviewing those costs and determining which are allocated or categorized with the SC2 damage and rehabilitation versus which would be part of the main original contract work. And they're going to be submitted to the design engineer as part of a claim. There's no indication still that the district's going to be responsible for any of the additional costs required for this work or for the delays. So table one summarizes the updated redundancy project budget, and it divides out the main wastewater treatment plant redundancy project from the SC2 damage and rehabilitation. So moving on to the project update, this report covers June through December 2024, except a few areas where it's noted. The schedule is based on the contractor's December 1st, 2024 schedule update. And we have revised contract days and added contract days to the contractor's contract, the contractor's contract for the SC2 work. So looking at the schedule summary on table two, the current contract duration or the term allowable is 1,270 days. Taken from January 25th of 2021. Current contract completion date would be July 18th of 2024. But as you see there, we're anticipating per the December update, a contract completion date of March 31st, 2025, meaning that there is some additional days that aren't currently awarded to the contractor. So this is going off script a little bit, but we would be reviewing that at the end of the project to determine, you know, what liquidated damages would be owed by the contractor for the slippage. So days have been awarded to the contractor for the SC2 work that was added as a change order because it wasn't due to construction issues or failures on their part. But there were still some delays that we had determined were the fault of the contractor that I mentioned earlier, and delays for schedule, critical equipment deliveries in that. So that's typically worked out at the end. Budget summaries were drafted on January 17th based on invoices received and costs incurred through November 2024 and approved change orders. The contractor is a little bit behind on the pay applications, and the construction manager is working very diligently to get them caught up on that, and has been making some progress. So the construction costs reflected are just through September. Current contract is just over $34 million. That's a 27% change order. And I wanted to point out that less than 2% of that is on the main project, which is a really good change order percentage, but we did have that, you know, a dramatic failure of the SC2 that's costing quite a bit. So change orders 27 through 32 are summarized here. They were issued between June and December. And those are all related to the SC2 work. The overall project budget is summarized in Table 4. For construction, I believe it's through September, about $29 million has been spent to date out of their authorized budget of $34.2 million, leaving approximately $5.2 million to finish. We still, at that time, still had about $1.3 million in construction contingency budgeted. And some other construction costs, which were early in the project, it was PG&E costs and a few other costs that weren't directly under the construction contract. Professional services costs, we are estimating a budget of $8.5 million and about $7.7 million spent to date for just under $1 million left over. In total, the budget is $44,460,000, and of that, there's about $7.5 million remaining. There's a few line items, these three line items at the bottom of Table 4. I'll go through those briefly. We're estimating the claim at about $8.9 million for the SC2-related damages and rehabilitation. And I'll just note, I believe that footnote 4 covers it. It is based on the estimated project budget, and it does include a contingency. Obviously, the claim is only going to include actual costs. Hopefully, not all of the contingency is spent. And so we'll prepare that claim with all the backup material. So it might be less than the 8.9, but it doesn't mean that the district would be paying that difference. It would just mean that money was not spent. Retention for liquidated damages right now is estimated at $525,000. And those LDs are for delays that were directly related to the contractor's work or the contractor's delays, and are there to cover the district's costs for construction management, administration, and oversight. So the total estimated district cost is this last line item, which is about $34.9 million. And we'll note that that is within their original budget for the project. So going on to the summary of work, in June, it was a whole lot of work to get Keller, the ground improvement or the micropile subcontractor, out there doing their pull testing for the piles and preparing for that work. There was some back and forth between the contractor and the design engineer and the construction manager to assess the actual ground conditions and come up with an appropriate design for that micropile. And they began installation of the micropiles in June. That continued into July. They had a little setback because their rig went down. Progress was halted. There was a lot of concern over it, but they did get it back up and running relatively promptly. You'll see on the report for August, they were able to repair the drill rig on August 9th, and they completed the micropile installation by the end of the month. In September, Keller demobilized, and Phelons got back into the SC2 and continued demolition to remove the remaining parts of the original concrete slab. So part of it was left there for Keller's work and supporting their rig and the work they needed to do to get the micropiles in there. So after they got that demolition completed, they started preparing that sub base for the new slab. And did some work associated with the water stop on the exterior perimeter. They continued in October, putting in rebar. We got the SC2 mechanism, which had been pulled out of the clarifier. That's the metal structure that goes around. And, you know, it's been sitting for quite some time, so they had to do some touch-up paint and coating on that. November, they were able to get the concrete slab poured, and they got all four quadrants poured, and they started reinstalling the mechanism and continued coating touch-up work. By December, they completed the SC2 mechanism installation, and they had their electrical subcontractor come back out to rewire the mechanism and the lights on the clarifier. The mechanism manufacturer, Clearstream, came out and did a site visit to inspect it, make sure it's up to their standard, since it was installed, originally inspected and passed, and then they had to take it out to do this work and reinstall it. So that was a positive report, and they were able to halt the groundwater dewatering by December 12th. At that point, several cracks became visible within the SC2 slab, and I want to be very clear that these are very different in nature from the crack that was originally discovered. When we first got the call and got some pictures, everybody scrambled, like, oh no, not again. But these cracks in the concrete, they were looked at very closely. We had our structural subconsultant come in and review alongside Kennedy Jenks, the design engineer, to evaluate the nature of the cracks, and they do appear to be consistent with shrinkage cracks, which are expected for concrete. And there's a repair method in the specifications for how to deal with that. So they inject a material to help seal up the cracks. So that, as of late, has been taking up the contractor's time and causing a few delays in getting the startup of the secondary clarifier going. So as far as anticipated work, Feelance is continuing that crack repair at SC2. Once that's done, they will be installing the grout that covers the floor to make a level surface for the clarifier mechanism and the scraper at the bottom. And then they'll be able to fill it up and start it up once that grout is cured. And then we'll finally get back on track and get back to commissioning of the redundancy project overall. That commissioning period is, per the specs, to be 45 days minimum. If there's any issues, any equipment failures, or anything else, Feelance will come out and make those repairs, get it back up and running, and that 45-day starts over. Because we want to see everything running smoothly, as expected, for a minimum of 45 days. And that concludes my report. There's some construction photos attached. The executive summaries from the construction manager's monthly reports are attached. And then at the very end, there's a detailed budget summary. I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Well, thank you so much for the report, and thank you for the staff report in our agenda packet as well. As somebody who is new, it was really nice to see the timeline, the separated costs, and everything like that. So I'll open it up for the board for questions. I'll start with Director Ray Russom.
Yeah, just a few. So first of all, kind of in backwards order, I guess, on the crack repair, I had not heard the story you just said, so my heart dropped as soon as you said it, and you kind of walked me through that whole emotional roller coaster you all must have gone through. So I remember when we were talking at the very beginning of what were we going to do about this, and we talked about some basically sealant that was actually stronger than the concrete itself, and we thought maybe we might be able to do that at the original repair. So when we're talking about the repairs for right now for these minor and expected cracks that are not that they're not structural. Is that what we're talking about, is using those types of products that really will preserve the integrity of that?
Yeah, essentially it's a similar type method where they drill small holes along the sides of the crack and inject this, I always get it mixed up, but I think it's hydrophilic material that will seek out water and expand and move into that crack. And to give a little more of a picture for you, these cracks are what we'd call hairline cracks. And, you know, in dry conditions, when it's sunny outside, by the afternoon, you can't see them at all because they're dried up, the temperature is warmed up, the concrete's nice and warm, and there's no water seeping through, or it just evaporates like immediately because it's such a small amount. But in the morning, you do see the weeping because the groundwater outside is higher than the crack on the inside, and we don't have anything on the inside. And so we do want to address those and get those sealed as much as possible so we have a watertight structure And the spec does require inspection both in, you know, first thing in the morning and then later in the afternoon, so that you're not just inspecting when it's dry and warm outside. So you're seeing both conditions.
Got it. I have a fiscal question for Director for District Administrator Gent, so I'll hold off. The only other question I have for you, Eileen, I'm cautiously excited about where we're at right now. So can you let me know what that, I mean, I know we've got commissioning right in front of us and that 45 days. Can you just kind of give the public the timing on that and remind me what the timing on that is? It's been adjusted from January to February.
Yeah, and I think it would be fair to say that, you know, myself and Mr. Gent and Mr. Jones are all checking in on a daily basis to see what the status of the crack repair is. So it really is hinging on that. We had hoped.
If you would, can you please let us concentrate up here? Audience?
Excuse me.
Thank you.
So it's a bit of a moving target, but we're very hopeful that the crack repair will get wrapped up, you know, by the end of the week.
This week?
Fingers crossed. Yeah. I mean, we're all shooting for it, and they're doing everything they can do. That was the hope last week as well. I'll go ahead and say that. So we do need, you know, we're being very cautious, and we want all the parties to be satisfied with the repair that's occurred, most of all the district, the design engineer and the construction manager and the contractor, right? So hopefully if that gets finished up this week, they'll be able to grout the floor next week. There might be rain, so that could upset the schedule a little bit. And then they'd be ready to fill it the following week. There'd be a one-week period where they prove out the clarifier function with clean water, and then we can start commissioning the aeration basin and the clarifier. So backing up, grout, fill, startup. So 3 weeks out before the 45-day commissioning.
Okay. And so we're looking at early April, maybe, for a celebration? I don't want to say that with a capital C.
I feel like I need my calendar in front of me. I think we, the soonest we'd be starting up would be March. So yeah, it could be, it at the earliest would likely be mid-April for completion of commissioning. And again, it's a minimum 45 day. Very hopeful. It's all smooth, and any little hiccups can get fixed quickly. And they have done some. They've done quite a bit of equipment startup as this shifted, and we had to, you know, do the work on the secondary clarifier. They're able to get a lot of the equipment started up in the aeration basin. It's just not with process yet.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Gent, just quickly looking at table four, and this is as much for my just pounding it into my head all the time, but also because we have lots of people here and I want to just make sure everybody's leaving with the same set of information. So on the total estimated district cost, that's the very last number in the chart, right? That's the 35-ish million dollar one. That is sadly not on time, but is on budget.
Correct.
And so the extra roughly $10 million in there that's going to shake down to some accurate number when we don't have contingency in there or anything like that. Just being clear, that is expected to be covered by the insurance on Kennedy Jenked.
Right? Correct.
So that's, even though we're fronting that and we're using taxpayer money or ratepayer money to do that, that money's coming back to the district.
Correct. And Ms. Shields and I were on a call with Kennedy Jenks yesterday to just to begin the process of having that discussion as we close this out, because their insurer is saying once we're closed out and we hand them the final bill, they have communicated that it will take them 60 to 90 days to approve that claim. So they'll be reviewing and possibly asking questions about, you know, who, what, why those charges are being put in, included in the claim. And, you know, they'll have an opportunity to dispute certain things. That there will be some items that I'll want to pass along and attempt to get covered that may be more of a gray area. But the bulk of the money, the whole team fully anticipates being covered and will be, you know, arguing over, $100,000 at the end of the day when we're settling that claim.
And Kennedy Jenks has been helpful and cooperative.
Yeah,
that hasn't changed.
Yeah, so their commitment to delivering a complete product has continued. They showed up and initially thought that this repair was going to be on the magnitude of $3 million. And so they've had to come to terms with the fact that this is a much more substantial repair. And a lot of it's due to the time, the setback of the time to handle all this, and the fact that we have to pay construction managers and Ms. Shields to continue on the project. And so those costs are all duplicative and add on to the claim that is going to Kennedy Jenks. So, the ratepayers will pay the original budgeted amount is what is anticipated.
So final question on that I didn't even think to ask until just tonight when you brought up that you're like just starting to dip your toe into the negotiations on this. One thing we are losing as ratepayers is the investment that we would have made on this money that was on hand. So is that added in there?
We have indicated that we intend to claim interest on the loss. So right now, have we expended about $6 million to date, Eileen? Our interest is, as rates have come up during the project, actually. So at the local agency investment fund, LAIF, is where we hold some of our money. That rate for the January month is 4.366%. It's a substantial return. And then the rest of our money is held in the county treasury. And that's for December, that was 3.57. They haven't announced their January rate yet, but it's 3.57%. So those are some of the things we're talking about is like we're also losing interest returns on this money that we've fronted. And so we're tracking that and intend on. And so that's maybe one of those costs that I was referring to that I'm going to pass through and they may push back and there will be some discussion over that. But that's not a direct cost of making the repair. That's a loss that we took and we were required to deliver this project. So there is an argument that they have, but it was a cost that we shouldn't have incurred. So there's a sound argument on our side to claim it.
Got it. Thank you very much. That concludes my questions.
Director Austin or Vice Chair Austin. I know. I know they were my questions too.
on the cracks. So you say they're hairline cracks, and so you've the ones that you've already identified that have been identified. Is there a chance that more will happen in the future?
We don't anticipate more at this time because they. I'm not a structural engineer, I'll say that first, but from what our structural engineers have advised, the amount of shrinking that would have occurred to cause these cracks
has already occurred. Okay, and then when the grout goes over, that'll seal everything, right? And it couldn't crack again after it's grouted, right? You don't know that, but yeah, okay. Okay.
Well, I'd like to jump in on that. So, all of these concrete structures from the very beginning anticipated these types of cracks.
Right.
And so that was one of the challenges, and Director Ray Russom alluded to it earlier, when we encountered the actual structural crack where there was optimism on Kennedy Jenks' side, I think, where they're like, well, maybe this is just like a bigger hairline crack. And we're like, no, that's a structural crack, and the floor is actually displaced and lifted up. And it's that displacement that is the indicator. So when you have steel-reinforced concrete, it can crack, and all the structural integrity is maintained.
Yeah,
it still holds all of the load-bearing capacity. But once it cracks and is moved, then it no longer has the same structural capability. And so it's really that movement that in the first crack that was unacceptable and required us to remove the floor and repair it. So any structure that's built throughout the state out of concrete, when it cures, it's going to have these shrinkage cracks. And it's caused a lot of scrutiny, and we knew it would, cause some scrutiny tonight these types of questions, because we're all concerned is this the same type of crack? And no, these are the types of cracks we would have expected back in July of 2023 that we would have just repaired using these methods. These are the type of cracks that we encountered in the aeration basin, and it's a pretty straightforward repair process, and those were repaired adequately and structurally sound and holding water.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for that. And then I just, if you could just go over with me again, I just want to get it straight. The current contract, the completion date was originally July 18th. This is table two.
Okay.
And now we're scheduled for March 31st. So in that time in between, this will be, what is, you said a liquidated damages that you don't know with Velance?
So
what's going to be that?
Where it gets a little complicated is some of those are delays are due to the SC2 failure. So we had added contract days for that, the 370, based on an estimated SC2 startup period. But right now we're in kind of a gray area where we're addressing these concrete cracks. We may need to add some more days to Velance's contract to account for that. But there's still going to be some delay that occurred way back before the crack happened, because Velance was not prepared at that time to go into commissioning and meet that July 18th date. So the time in between right now, part of it's covered by Kennedy Jenks and the claim to Kennedy Jenks, and part of it's covered by this $525,000 that's noted at the bottom of table four. That was the original or the estimated retention for LDs for what we had identified.
So we have the $525,000 for the retention for liquidated damages, and so it'll be come out of that, whatever we come up with here, have to come up with, it'll come out of that money. Is that?
I'm not sure I'm understanding the. It would account for some of these days, this difference in the current contract completion date and the scheduled completion date. So there's a. Are you asking about the time value? There, the monetary value of those days and
yeah.
The CM and the yeah and my time, so yes, some of that is the 525, and we'll need to reassess and determine if added days need to be additional days need to be added to
and,
the,
and some of that due to the repair will come out of the
right. So normally it's just the contractor and owner that are dealing days, right? So that if the contractor is delayed, it's either the district's fault, the owner, or the contractor's fault. And I want to say to date, the district is holding no delay days. Is that correct? But what makes this, we've got a third party now that's holding part of the contract responsible for delays, right? So Kennedy Jenks, this SC2 repair, has delay days in excess of the 370 days that we awarded, and we said, how long is this going to take to do the repair? And they said 370 days. Well, it's taken longer than that. Well, even before that, the rest of the project, the contractor had experienced delays, and so they are responsible for those delays. And that's where we charge liquidated damages per our contract. So our contract with Velance says that every day that they go over, they owe us $3,500. And that's to pay for Ms. Shields and M&S, our construction managers and inspectors that are on site. And that's meant to cover those costs that we're incurring as those days go over. Now, Velance isn't responsible for all of those days because the SC2 failure is Kennedy Jenks. So some of these days that there's about 9 months of missing days here. And some of that is because of the secondary clarifier, which will be paid for by Kennedy Jenks, because we're sending the bills, Eileen's bills and the construction inspector's bills are all part of that claim, that $8.9 million. So those will be direct costs. And the $3,500 a day are contract agreed upon costs. And so that's what we'll be claiming. And so there will be a claim because Phelan's is going to say we're only responsible for this many days and the rest of the days are Kennedy Jenks. And there's going to be a little bit of back and forth. But I wanted the board and the public to understand currently the district is not responsible for any of that delay. Which sometimes district, like if there's a change condition or we change something that we want from the project, mm-hmm. we would pay those costs for the delay. But currently we have not encountered anything that caused us to delay the project.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I think everything, thank you very much, Ms. Shields. It was very good, full report. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think a lot of those questions, I also had the same questions. One of the things that I wanted to mention, though, or ask about the $8.9 million or almost $9 million, where we're fronting the money, where is that coming from?
So currently, the district was had approximately $10 million in reserves at the beginning of the year. And so that drawdown, that $6 million that we've spent so far has depleted those reserves. And so at the $8.9 million mark, our reserves are getting to a concerning level at the $1.1 million. But we still satisfy our reserve policy that's adopted. And that's why the board went forward with the budget adjustment to deliver the project. So we believe in March that with the SC2 repair, our meeting with Kennedy Jenks yesterday, in March we'll be able to submit that claim. And so we think that our 60 to 90 days starts in March, not at final completion of the project, just the SC2 repair. And that was one of the outcomes of the meeting with Kennedy Jenks yesterday is like, no, we're going to submit this claim in March. And they want to have everything resolved by June is what Kennedy Jenks' goal is. Now we all have goals and those insurance companies. What I said on the call is if it's a 60 to 90 day window, I imagine a $9 million claim is at the 90 day end of the 60 to 90 days. Mm-hmm. So.
And the liquidated damages and the contracted delays, that is going to be on top of this $8.9 million, or is it included in the $8.9 million?
So the liquidated damages are separate from the $8.9, and those are the ones that were already documented and accounted for as part of the $525,000. Don't quote me on the exact number that was illustrated in the staff report. And so that's the contractor's portion where we documented before that failure. It's like, hey, you're delayed, your project's delayed. And so those many days we've already said those are Phelan's. Now, at the end, there's going to be a back and forth claim from the contractor too on this, and we'll negotiate that settlement as well.
Thank you. Okay, those were my questions. I'm going to open this up for public comment, even though it's just a receive and file.
Well, Mayor D, congratulations on being the new chair and other board members. I apologize for distracting you with some questions that I got from the public previously. And I don't refer to myself as audience. I prefer to refer to us as your citizens or maybe even your customers for an enterprise agency, because we're certainly not here to be amused. The questions that I had from a member of the public, and I'm just going to read them because they are beyond my pay rate, per Vic, sorry, not Vic, sorry, that's not it. The concrete cracks are suspect. What was the quality control on the batch? The suggestion is that it had too much water in the mix to begin with, if there were cracks. A question, was there a quality control report for the concrete? Another question, is it possible to pour concrete without cracks, or does all concrete crack like this? And then I think finally, was the concrete mix reviewed in question? Was water added to the concrete truck after it arrived on site? And if shrinkage cracks were expected, why did they not put in control joints to direct where cracks would occur? And if cracks were anticipated, why did they not put an impermeable liner under the concrete? So I know we'd all like to hear what you have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Any other public comment?
Brenda Auer, 2025, I guess, is my chance to get back in to learn about the sewer more. Redundancy, that means this project was corrected. Is that what the okay, well, I'm new to this, so I'm going to have to try and catch up. One question is on the negotiations. Is there a possibility that the $8,972,000 could end up being less due to negotiations? Is that something to consider?
So continue your public comment, okay. And then you'll be recording and asking questions later.
My main question is, how much did the failed design of ESC2 actually end up costing in the long run at the end, just for the failure? And then when it says change orders 1 through 32, it says $7,309,000. Then down under estimated claim for SC2, it says $8,972,000. Again, I'm not an accountant, but it looks like to be $1,663,000 difference. I heard a padding of like $100,000. I was wondering why those numbers are different between those two categories. And yeah, I think that's it. Other than $9 million, you did say we would, if we have that money in an investment or something, that we would still retain some interest or something off of that, because $9 million for 3 months, 6 months, or even if longer is a lot of extra money. That's all. And forgive me if I'm asking maybe silly questions, but I'm going to keep learning. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Okay. Any other public comment? Then I will close public comment, and we can address a few of these questions. I'm going to bundle up all of the concrete questions into one. So what was the quality control, or was there a plan for filling those cracks? I guess that first question was a really good wrap-up question. What was the quality control on the cracks?
So,
Mr. Jan, I'm just going to jump in real quick. We did go through all of this ad nauseum in lots of meetings about, I mean, we learned so much about concrete. So I'm glad you're asking the question, but it's going to be beyond what he can answer in this. But if you can go back to older meetings, you'll see I've learned so much about engineering and the concrete and everything we tested and retested afterwards. So just know there's a huge story here.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, so on the concrete questions, yes, all concrete is anticipated to crack of this size and scale. On quality control was followed, and that was something that we looked at. So when we first investigated this crack, we did have to say, was it a quality control problem? Was it a construction method? Did the contractor put it in wrong? Was there something wrong at the concrete plant? Did they mix the batch wrong? And this is part of a thorough investigation that we did. And then we also had to look at the actual design calculations. And so as we went through this process, we have investigated, I remember it was five things. I just listed four. I'm forgetting the fifth one. But as part of those investigations, we ruled out each one of the quality control issues. And this is under the scrutiny of a design firm that does $250 million of business a year. And so they would prefer it be somebody else's cause, right? And so they're watching this. And as we're going through, we were able to lay out. And when we checked their design work and the calculations, we identified a substantial flaw in the thickness of the floor slab that indicated that they were off by they designed it at a 10 inch thick slab, and it actually needed to be a 24 inch thick slab to hold the loads. And so they had to come up with a design to modify that. And so when Director Ray Russom is referring to previous meetings, it's walking through that investigation and all the different aspects we looked at to make sure that we were assigning fault to the right party and to make sure that the district wasn't at fault. That was the fifth thing. Was there a changed condition? I just reminded myself as I was talking through this. Was there something different about the site than what we described when we scoped the project? And the answer was no, because they were scoped to design a tank that would withstand the groundwater pressure that was there. It was documented. This isn't unusual for wastewater sites because they're usually low-lying. And so all that was included and very deliberate in trying to design for those loads, but they just missed it. And that's why they've agreed to this this large claim, is because they know it, that it was their fault that it occurred. And I'll say that this is unusual. I've been an engineer since 1998. I've only done large infrastructure. And this is the first time in my career that I've actually gone through with a claim for errors and omissions against a design firm. The quality control issues are something that we expected could be the problem too. Like, are these cracks too much water, not enough water, not enough shrinkage agent? Like, all these things were investigated. And so we're pulling individual slips on concrete trucks, looking at the mixed plants design. And so that investigation was complete and thorough, and tried to address those very relevant questions that were asked earlier.
Great.
I've jotted down some of the other questions, and I might ask Ms. Shields to come up and clarify, because I don't want to misspeak on one of them. But to answer the one question about what are we talking about with redundancy, and that's the big picture of the project. We refer to the redundancy project right now. The plant only operates with what we call a single train. So the water goes through primary clarification, and then our fixed film reactor, and then to our secondary clarifier, and then to disinfection and out. The problem with having that single pass is if we need to take our fixed film reactor offline to do maintenance, we can't fully treat our wastewater. And so plants for decades have been required, if new plants have been required, to have two trains, a redundant process. And so that's what this project was intended to accomplish, was for this treatment plant to have the ability to have all of the wastewater going through what we would refer to as one train, while we can shut down the other train and do maintenance, and then flip back and forth so that we never have undertreated wastewater. On the 8.9 million versus the 7.3 million. So the 7.3 million are all change orders to date. So that includes the 2% change orders that we paid for. And why that's different than the 8.9 million, that's the claim for the SC2 damage. And that's the biggest portion of our change order, but that's not just on the construction side. That also includes direct costs for professional services, design work, and construction management, and that's why it's also higher. But Ms. Shields, please clarify my rambling.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you so much.
I think you're accurate in what you stated, Jeremy, that the I'm going to the table here. The 7.3 million for change orders 1 through 32 does include all construction change orders. Some of those are for secondary clarifier 2, some are not. The vast majority is secondary clarifier 2. The $8.9 million in the estimated claim includes professional services costs associated with SC2 damage and rehabilitation. And it also includes contingencies, both on construction and professional services. So it's a budgeted amount, and you'll see the column is labeled as such, that this is budget, whereas the other table, table 3, is describing actual construction contract amount and contract change orders. That's the main difference.
Okay.
Okay. And as far as the negotiations, it sounds like the designer is being very cooperative with these negotiations.
Yes. So the designer has been extremely cooperative, and I believe that all the costs will be recouped. And I've been consistent in stating that, and I share this with the entire team, and I share it with the board, and I share it with the public. I don't always trust insurance companies. I think that's just good business. We've been making Kennedy Jenks sign all of these changes. Every time there's a big number, it gets their signature before it gets my signature that they're saying this is necessary for the SC2 repair. So we've done everything and taken extra steps to protect us if this goes sideways. And so I believe the claim will be paid without issue. If it doesn't get claimed, we have secondary options where we also believe we would prevail, but we would incur legal fees. And we wouldn't necessarily be successful at recouping legal fees because that's just not usually how it works from agencies suing designers. So we would get these costs, but we would have to pay for our own attorneys. And so that's why we need to focus on the claim process. And but I want everybody to rest assured, like, even if the insurance company says we're not going to pay all this, at that point we're litigating against Kennedy Jenks, and we have all the evidence and the case in front of us that's necessary to prevail if that were necessary. Now, that's not something that they want to allow or they want to even occur, because when you're a consultant like that, one of the things when you're proposing on projects, most proposals say, please tell us about any active litigation and what the reason, what the cause, and what the planned outcome is. And if you're a designer doing water and wastewater infrastructure throughout the entire country, you don't want to be talking about a multi-million-dollar lawsuit and explaining how your design was substandard. And it's so from that standpoint, they very much want to just get this resolved, use the coverage that they've paid for, and have us be made whole.
Perfect. And before we move on, can we silence all cell phones, please? It's a little bit distracting up here. There it goes again. Sorry. And then in addition to that, if anybody needs to make any comments or questions, please step out to the lobby while we conduct our business up here. Thank you so, so much. Okay. Any other questions or discussion from up here?
I'm just so excited about our next meeting for an update on this, that there's water in that damn thing. So
fill it up.
Okay, let's fill her up.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, so receive and file. We will now move on to item 6C, which is the adoption of resolution number 2025-457 to bring district bylaw section 2.7 disruptions in line with the current state of First Amendment law.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item in front of you is administrative. It actually came to us from our legal counsel, Jones Mayer. It's adoption of the resolution 2025-457 to bring the district bylaw section 2.7 disruptions in line with the current state of First Amendment law. And so that's really all we're doing is modify. We were actually close. If you read through the staff report, it's not substantial changes. Just different language and somewhat semantics, but we want to be consistent with guidance from the state. And so we had legal counsel modify our bylaws. And so that's the item before you. And what we're doing is just coming into line with rules of decorum and how to handle disruptions at public meetings.
Thank you. Do we have any questions, Vice
no
Chair?
Questions.
Okay.
Nope.
Director. All right. Then I will open public comment for this item. And I forgot, please state your name for the record.
Ron Arnelson, Grover Beach. At the last issue, Ray Rosom, I had an issue with questions and kind of like dragging things out and you're kind of wasting your time. But I would remind her that you have a new member on the council or on the board that probably needs some of this information that you haven't had it, and it's probably good for her to hear it too. So it may be boring you, but Cassie may want to hear some of the stuff that we're asking questions about also.
Sir, I was only saying to the public that it would probably be more information that they would get tonight, and that it would be good for the public to that was related to the public, and I was concerned that Ms. Auer's question was not going to be completely answered. So I apologize for my being unclear in what I meant, but that was not directed at another director. That was meant to help out a member of the public.
Any other public comment? I will close public comment and any discussion, or I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution number 2025457, bringing the bylaws section 2.7 disruptions in line with the current state of the First Amendment law.
Second.
I think this is a voice vote, or yeah. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries. So now on to item 6D, which is the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report.
All right, I'll go ahead and take the lead. Michael Jones, Plant Superintendent. The item before you is the Plant Operations Report for the reporting period of December 1st through January 31st. During this reporting period, the district had no violations of its permit to report. All process values, as shown in the December and January tables, were all well within permit limitations. Operations staff completed a multitude of operation and maintenance tasks. We also completed a multitude of work orders. Moving on to some training, operations staff performed our laboratory demonstration of capability on our call alert 18 fecal coliform analysis. During this reporting period, we had no call outs. I'm happy to report as of January 27th, 2025, all three exceedances that occurred in 2024 have expired, and district staff will continue to work diligently to prevent any instance of noncompliance. Moving on to some projects, operations staff completed converting our old secondary clarifier number one sludge pump room into a process control laboratory. The new process control laboratory will be used primarily for process control analysis to verify operation of different treatment processes, primarily the new activated sludge treatment process. Analysis that will be performed are suspended solids, settleability, pH, ammonia, nitrite, nitrate, and microscopy of our activated sludge. Operator Justin Music was the project lead and did a great job in completing the project. The conversion included removal of our floor coating, installation of new floor and wall paint, installation of new lab bench tables, sink with drainage, water lines, and laboratory equipment as shown in the photos below. I've included some before and after photos for your board and members of the public. Moving on to some staff photos. In this first photo, I have operator Billy Romhild and Robert Grajeda performing the removal of the sludge bed feed pump. In the next photo, I have operator Everardo Vargas and Chris Rigoni performing an influent pump number 3 seal installation. In the next photo, I have operator Mike Arias and Rick Jackman performing the reinstallation of the sludge bed feed pump. And this photo is of Brian Ventura from Ventura Welding. He's performing an installation of a stainless steel patch on our Grit King. And then in this final photo, I have operator Justin Music and Everardo Vargas performing a mixing of our SE1 return activated sludge well to break up solids and remove some of the surface scum within the well. I also would like to let your board know that we do have some members of staff here. Just wanted to again thank them for their continued service to the district and the community. And with that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being here in the report. Again, another really great staff report. Love all the pictures and seeing everything come to fruition. Being the newest member, it's really great to see awesome. The progress. So I will start for questions to my left, to my right.
I don't have any questions. Just great to see you guys all here. And thank you for the great job you're all doing. We appreciate it.
Okay, I will open this item for public comment. Seeing nobody come up, I will close public comment, and we will receive and file that. Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry.
I have a small portion at the beginning. Yeah, it's your first
time. Sometimes
we let Michael go first after I've been talking for...
I know. Oh, good. Okay, so next time it's Rochambeau. I see.
Mine's brief, because usually it focuses on redundancy and the full project update was given tonight. So, again, good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Brief administrator's report. Our cogeneration project, we had some cost issues when the planning document was developed. Not sure if that project's going to move forward, looking at scope reduction options to try to get costs back into a range where we could actually have a return on investment if we were to move forward with the cogeneration. And for the members of the public that are here, what cogeneration means is currently the district plant, we have digesters and we produce methane gas, and we flare all of that gas right now. There's just a continuous flame at the facility. And so one of the things you can do is use this methane gas. If you clean it up, take the water and take siloxanes and the hydrogen sulfide out of it. And that's a process and takes equipment. Once you get it clean, it's basically natural gas, and you can run engines, you can run boilers, and so we can provide a lot of energy for the treatment plant if we were able to clean this gas and reuse it. One of the challenges is we're the size of facility where the economies of scale are close, which makes delivering these type of projects questionable on where the contractor pricing is on whether you can catch return on investment. And some of it is PG&E pricing. PG&E pricing has pushed these projects so much more competitive because the energy rates have continued to soar. And so you're seeing more and more of these agencies that were too small to have cogen now. We are adequately sized to generate a quarter of a megawatt with our gas. And so we've reached out to the design team to try to reduce that scope. And we're also working with another vendor who's contacted the district to have a sit down, a different company that wants to propose on repurposing and doing beneficial reuse of that gas. And that meeting will occur next Friday on the 14th. Some miscellaneous items that I participated in ranking the county's RFP and selection of a consultant for engineering, hydraulic modeling, and biological monitoring services for the Aurora Grande Creek waterway channel. And what that is the flood control channel that's along the backside of the treatment plant. The county is in the process of getting permits and a plan in place that allows them to get in there and maintain flow and remove vegetation from that channel. And it's a multi-year endeavor. And so they were selecting a design team and an environmental team. And I was just a panel member that participated. We did no plant tours. And as a publication, there were no obvious tentative items. There will be normal business items at the next meeting. But with that, it concludes my administrator's report. And I'm happy to answer any questions your board may have.
Thank you. All right, any questions? Any questions? In good faith, since I did it too early, I'll open up public comment again. I will close public comment. And now we will receive and file that. So moving on to board member communications, I will start with Vice Chair Austin. Okay. Director Ray Russom?
The only thing that I would add is that a company reached out to me directly via former Assemblymember Cunningham, and I will be attending that meeting as well next week with a company that's just reached out and basically said, let's see if we can help you. And so we don't have any information. We're just meeting and see what they might be able to do, and it's very good timing considering that our cogen project has become prohibitively expensive, and maybe... Jeremy, I'm just assuming we're just not doing that, even though we haven't actually made that decision yet. That wasn't in the report today.
We haven't. Michael and I met with that team. Was it Monday? Tuesday? Yesterday? Was it only yesterday?
No.
Is it really yesterday? Yeah. It's been a long couple of days. So when we met, as you can imagine, when you're shutting down these type of projects, there's some begging and pleading. And so they want to go back and they're revising numbers and they want to show us numbers. And so that's why I haven't fully updated your board, and I've told you that we'll update. But even after yesterday's meeting, they were like, they have a plan, you know, and so we want to let that, they're not charging us anything right now. They just want to show us what they might be able to do inside of our budget.
Okay, great. So looking forward to next Friday.
Perfect. Okay. And I don't really have anything other than thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on this board and learn more about South Sanitation, South County Sanitation. So with that, I will adjourn this meeting at 7:10 p.m. Where's my gavel?